morning.
I'm going to be sharing my Christian journey with y'all this morning. I was raised in a Baptist church, grew up going to Vacation Bible School, lots of Wednesday night church suppers. I went to GA camp, which was one of the best experiences I ever had. I just loved being a part of our church. As I grew older, I drifted away. Wasn't very strong in my Christian faith. Went to church periodically, but it wasn't a priority for me. Got married, went to church now and then, but just wasn't feeling it. In November of 2000, my father was diagnosed with leukemia. He was a Christian, but he didn't live a Christian life. He was a bitter man, angry a lot. Right before he was diagnosed with leukemia, he turned his life around. Excuse me. He started reading scripture. He started going to church. It was great. But I thought, God, my dad changed, and now he's sick. Why did you do this? In November of 2001, my father was baptized, and we had the wonderful honor of seeing my dad go into the waters of baptism with our oldest son, Adam. My brother was in the water with the pastor, and I thought, wow, this bitter man that I knew all my life, of course, I was his little girl. I loved him so much, but he was a harsh man. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe he had changed his life. And to witness that was amazing. Well, God took him December 17th of 2001. I was angry. I was furious. If this is how things work, I don't want to be a Christian. If my dad is saved and he's found his way and then you stricken him with this illness and you take him, why do I want to be a Christian? If this is how it works, I'm just not interested. I struggled. I struggled with the guilt because I knew people lose children every day. Newborns. So my dad was 55. I'm almost 54. Yes, he was young, but I had my dad for many years. So I struggled with not only being angry with God, but I struggled with my guilt. Why do I feel this way? I can't feel this way. So I just continued to pray. My mother tried to talk to me. My dad's pastor tried. He talked to me. I'm just like, I'm bitter. I'm angry. We started going back to church periodically, nothing dedicated, just trying to find my way. Fast forward to 2011. I passed this church twice a day every day going to work. There was the VBS sign hanging out front. And every day I passed it, God said, you need to be in church. You need to get your children in church. I'm like, no, I'm good. No, I really don't need it. Every single day, twice a day, God said, you will be in this church. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. So after about a week or so, I saw the sign going to work again. I got to work and I immediately emailed Susan, the youth director. I said, my children are Bible school age. Could we please come? Is everyone allowed? And she said, absolutely. I explained to her that our kids were friends with Corey and Logan Witt. Could you please put them in the classroom with them? Absolutely. She was wonderful. First night of Bible school, we showed up, and I was so nervous. After just not feeling connected with my childhood church. I was like, I don't know how this is going to work out. So we came in, and I have never felt so welcome in my life. Lee Ellison was the pastor. He was great. I was like, wow, you're the pastor? Everyone, Susan, everyone helping, they were so friendly and so comforting, and they assured me, your kids will be fine. I picked the kids up that evening, and they had such a wonderful time. It was great. Let me rewind for just a moment. Prior to that, my husband, Johnny, worked for a great family-owned company. They were bought out by this huge company, and most of the employees were let go. My husband was devastated, as, you know, the breadwinner for our family, to see him being so distraught and so hurt. It was horrible to watch. He was applying for jobs all over the place. He couldn't find anything. And I told him, you know, we're just going to have to pray. So going back to Bible school, after the kids were involved in Bible school and I felt so welcomed, God knew that we needed to feel that closeness to Him. We needed to feel the closeness of the church family. Within a week or so, Johnny got an employment opportunity. I was like, wow, this is how prayer works. It was incredible. We, of course, have grown with this church. After a year or so, we moved our membership. We became members. You see, our children are part of the praise team. They share their talent. I'm a deacon now. I never thought I'd see that. It was just so crazy how God was working in our lives. I wanted to be a part of a church, and I wanted church to be a dedication for our family. I wanted it to be that the kids wouldn't have to say, hey, Mom, are we going to church today? I wanted it, my goal was to be, it was known, Sunday morning, you don't make any plans because we will be in church. And it got to that point. They didn't have to ask. They knew we are going to church. And that made me feel wonderful. Fast forward to October the 1st of 2020. I got the call that my husband had suffered a massive heart attack. He's a truck driver. And he started suffering the heart attack while he was driving the truck. But God got him back to his shop. He got him so that they could help him out and they could call the rescue squad. He almost died, but they got him there quick enough. And that's when my faith became even more incredible, because I knew that if God was ready for him, He would have had him crash that truck in those mountains that morning. He could have taken out other people. He had a stent put in that day. And then the surgeon said he's going to have a triple bypass. He had to lay in that hospital bed for 6 days. Six miserable days, not knowing what our future held. You see, Johnny's employer doesn't offer any insurance. They offer no benefits, no short-term disability, nothing. He knew he was going to be out of work for several months. And if anyone knows me, you know that I stress. I stress about the smallest little thing, but I really stress about money. We were lucky enough to build a new home 4 years ago. And all that Johnny could worry about is, how are we going to make it? What are we going to do? And a calmness came over me, and I told him, honey, don't you worry about a thing, because we're going to be okay. We prayed, I prayed harder than I ever had, but something came over me. And my faith was so strong, I did not care about anything but getting my husband and my children's father home. I wanted him to be okay. This church is what I needed. And back in 2011, when God kept telling me, you look at that Vacation Bible School sign and you get your butt in that church, he knew. He knew what our future held. I had no idea. He knew we were going to need the support and the love of this church. He knew that we were going to need comfort. And he knew that we were going to need him. So I want to thank each and every one of you. Your love, your support, your text, your food, your phone calls, and the love offering that was collected for us. 4 months with no work for my husband. But during those 4 months, I didn't care about the money. I didn't care about anything but God above and our family. And with each and every one of you and your prayers, I truly believe that's why I'm standing here today with my husband in the congregation. Because we found our faith, we found our God, and we found you. So thank you for being our church.
Like many of you, the last few days, I have reflected about 9/11. And as terrible as that was, what kept coming back to my mind was the people after that terrible day. Churches were full. Some people that had been away from church, their faith was renewed. They had something that they were looking for, they were grasping for. But God's always there. It doesn't take a terrible event or a tragedy. Sports is, if you know me, is important. Sometimes maybe too important. I'm honored to have three of the guys that I have the privilege of coaching be here today. And I promise you, I did not threaten them. I did not tell them they would run if they did not come. But sports has always been something that I truly believe it prepares you for life. And I think the guys that are here will back me up when I say that, because it's the lessons that we learn, it's a building block. Now I can think of my testimony, and I could, you know, just like a phone, when the version changes, you get 13.0, 13.1, 2, 3, and 4. And I always believe that sometimes that testimony can be something that it changes. For me, it has. And again, go back to sports. In 1984, a little 4-year-old boy one Sunday said, "Mommy, why doesn't Daddy go to church with us?" I heard it. I made a difference. I knew I had to change. Out of the mouth of children, we can always learn. Version 2 of the testimony. 1994, my dad passes away. I struggled, but God was there. And renewed again, strengthened my faith, because my dad passed away on November 29th, 1994. 1 week after that, my mom was looking through the attic for some Christmas decorations. Over to the side were gifts. You see, my dad had purchased gifts for everybody for Christmas. Again, he passed away on November 29th. Do not tell me that God doesn't have a plan, even in the terrible times, to prepare us all for what we may experience. You go back and reflect. I look back and go, yes. If it hadn't have been for that four-year-old little boy saying, Daddy, why, Mommy, why doesn't Daddy go to church? Would I have believed? I don't know. Was it luck? Absolutely not. God has a plan. Fast forward to 2020, terrible year for everybody. Mine was a little bit more exciting. The first thing of which was I had planned was a knee replacement. That went well. That was in February. In April, April 17th, I was up here at church, and I was experiencing what I thought I was just an older guy that was out of shape. It kind of went away as I finished cutting the grass. The following week, still some of the same problems, and I'm thinking this isn't going away, and it's not because I'm out of shape. So on April 24th, I go to the doctor. I'm listening to my body. I encourage everyone, when you're getting signals with your body, God's speaking to you to let you know. You're getting that warning shot. Go to the doctor. We do some tests. He says, I want you to go see a cardiologist. Monday morning, the 27th, he calls that morning and said some of the blood results indicate that there might be a pulmonary embolism. Well, the first thing I do is I look at Google and figure out what could that be, and I'm figuring, should I move? Okay, should I wrap myself in bubble wrap? Go to the doctor thinking I'm going to do a stress test, and I did mention to the doctor, did you get the cardiologist, did you get the blood results? He said, no. I said, well, I'm thinking from what I read, you probably don't want to do a stress test. He says, hey, that's a good diagnosis. But the echocardiogram showed something, and when the technician walked out that door and said, I'll be right back, you kind of get a clue. You get a clue. Doctor comes in, we discuss some options. He said, I need you to go to the hospital. Like, I'm thinking, okay, what, tomorrow? No, I need you to go from right here, right now. Another clue, something must not be right. Hospitals for me, I don't know about you, but you walk in, you're usually walking with someone, you're with people, you're expecting to see others, but you're going to visit. Keep in mind, 2020 was not a good time for hospitals. But I walked into the hospital, and it felt like a tomb. I'm walking by myself. I see nobody. No one. And I'm thinking, I thought these places are crowded. But it's like I found no one. Walking the halls, and I'm walking by myself, and I'm going, what's happened for me next? So you can imagine fear starting to come over. So later that evening, one test is done. The next morning, the doctor comes in and says, well, I need you to do another test called a catheterization. I said, okay, whatever you think. And I'm starting to worry more and more. Go for the test. If you've ever experienced that, you're sitting here, the doctor's talking to you, but I'm looking at that screen, and I'm thinking, from dusting off some things from biology, that doesn't necessarily look right. Well, he's talking to me, and he says, well, the good news is I'm not going to do a stent today. I said, okay, that sounds good. He said, but, have you ever heard that word but sometimes, and it seems like it's about this long? That's the way I felt. It seemed like it stopped. He said, but we're going to have to do bypass. Well, again, you're alone. And I'm thinking about it, and I'm just trying to go, thinking stent sound like a better deal to me, but it didn't work that way. So he's talking to me. He says, have you ever heard of what we call the Widowmaker? I said, yeah. He said, well, yours is 100% blocked. Well, what I knew about the Widowmaker is, why am I still talking to you? He said, but because it had been a gradual block, the heart developed other channels of blood around the heart. And he goes, that doesn't happen very often. So I'm laying there, and the first thing I'm thinking about is, I don't know why, I'm sitting here thinking about the song Kris Kristofferson, when he says, "Why me, Lord? What have I ever done to deserve even one of the pleasures I've known?" And in this case, I'm going, why am I still alive? God has a plan. So immediately he starts, the doctor's talking. He says, "You want to talk to your wife?" I said, "You don't know my wife. She's going to know, well, she's going to have a bunch of questions that I will not be able to answer." He said, "I'll call her." He calls her, starts talking. She thinks the surgery is going to be that day, but it was put off for a few days. But God also has a sense of humor. I was scheduled for surgery May 1st. They do everything they do, prepare you to do for surgery. And getting ready to go into the OR. And the doctor says, "Well, you're not going to believe this." And I said, "What? What you got for me?" He says, "Well, the air condition's broken. We're not going to do the surgery today. And just like a car that breaks down on a Friday or a Saturday, there's nobody around to repair it. So I have to wait till Monday." Well, you can only imagine being in the hospital. Here it is now, several days, no visitors, no guests. I'm looking out a window, and all I can see is the sunlight, and I see people leaving and people coming back and forth that work there. But now fear is setting in. Actually, it set in. I was thinking about that the Thursday night before, and I was just praying. You know, many times when you've seen a funeral on TV or you're part of a funeral, you hear people that get up and talk about the person that's deceased. Well, I was blessed enough during that period of time to hear from people that encouraged me, text, phone calls. Because you always, I don't know about you, but you always kind of wonder, am I doing things the right way? Have I lived life well? Well, that afternoon, and we're going to see if this works, but that afternoon, someone that I grew up with sent me a song. Let's hope it works.
When darkness tries to roll over my bones, when sorrow tries to steal the joy I own, when brokenness and pain is all I know, I won't be shaken, no, I won't be shaken, 'cause my fear doesn't stand a chance when I stand in your love. My fear doesn't stand a chance when I stand in your love. My fear doesn't stand a chance when I stand in your love. Sitting in your longer as a place to hide. I am not a captive to the lies. I'm not afraid to leave my past behind. Oh, I won't be shaken. Oh, I won't be shaken. My fear doesn't stand a chance when I'm standing in your love. My fear doesn't stand a chance when I'm standing in your love. My fear doesn't stand a chance when I'm standing in your love.
Fear doesn't stand a chance. Never will. Never will. On one of the, if you've heard the story about John Meyerhofer, he memorized a lot of scripture verses, and I had the privilege on several of those trips to share a room with him, and we got to talking about one particular scripture. And it's one, so many times we always think about it at the graveside. Okay? And it's Psalms 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still clear waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Here it is. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, thy comfort me. Thou hast prepared a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. And that's what I almost felt like that. I fear no evil. For God is with me. God is with all of us. There was a calm that came over me that, like Becky talked about before, that it's hard to describe. And like the song, why me, Lord? Why was I blessed? Why was I going through this, but why did I come out on the other side? God has a plan. God challenges all with our special gifts to do what we do. I'm thankful for my family, my wife, my kids, the 10 days that that Corey and Holly spent with Pam, while I was in the hospital for 12 days. Can't put a price on that. But through our faith in God, by the grace of God, for me, I'm still here. My work is not done. It's not time to retire. These young men that are here will tell you I'm very passionate when I get to talking. I get fired up, but I care about them. I care about them and what they're going to be like when they get out of high school going to college, get a job. Two of my classmates from high school are here. They didn't have anything better to do except listen to me talk, and I appreciate that. But it's important that when we talk about God, be a cheerleader. Be positive. Be excited. Because through the grace of God, we get to take another step. We get to breathe in this air. And I told Pam, after going through what I went through, that the skies were bluer. The birds, the song of the birds, had a different tone to it. And the stars at night had a sparkle beyond anything I could describe. We go to God for many things. But for me, it's a time to thank God. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Saving Private Ryan. It's a story of three brothers that were in the World War II, and two of them were killed, and there was a mission to try to save the last one that was still serving. And near the end, or during the course of trying to find this young man, most of the ones that were assigned this duty were killed. And as the captain that led this mission was on the bridge, mortally wounded, he leaned over to the young man that was going to be saved, and you may not have heard it, but the words were, "James, earn it. Earn it." Not sure if I've earned it, but I'm going to do all I can to honor what God has done for me. At the very end of the movie, after many decades, the young man now is an older man, and he stood before the grave of this person that had saved him. And kind of in tears, he turned and looked at his wife and said, "Have I lived a good life? Have I lived a good life?" We hope we get the answer to that when we take our last breath. But think about it. I'm hoping I earn it. I earn what God has done for me. I'm going to keep trying as long as He allows me to. And I hope that when I ask that question, "Have I lived a good life?" the words out of Jesus' mouth are, "Well done, my good and faithful servant."